glory to God, our light and our life.
You're listening to the recordings of sessions from the Institute on Liturgy, Preaching, and Church Music in July of 2024, hosted by Concordia University, Nebraska. If you'd like to learn more about past LCMS worship institutes or about those that might be coming soon, visit lcms.org/worship-institute.
Psalm 7, does everyone have a copy?
Yes.
As we continue our way. Another one besides Psalm 7? Oh, then I have a little sheet, a little half sheet too.
Yeah.
Got it.
Thank you for the mic.
All right, good. Are you guys familiar with Hebrew poetry and how it works? You know, we think of poetry, we think of a certain number of syllables per line, and you've got rhyming at the end. And that's not Hebrew poetry at all. I mean, notice the Psalms, the verses are never the same length. Right, or equal lengths. What's unique about Hebrew poetry is usually parallelism, where you'll have one phrase kind of restated with different words. It's almost like an exercise in thesaurus digging. And sometimes it'll be a phrase that the thought is completed in the next line. Sometimes it might be a thought that's contradicted in the next line. So there's different combinations of how that works. And each psalm will have usually a combination of some of those. You have some thoughts just repeated, sometimes thoughts that are new and just continue to evolve the discussion of the thought. If you're praying psalms, especially if you're speaking in some way, but chanting too, you know, if a psalm, if you look at a psalm and say, well, there's a lot of repetition, the first half of the verse is repeated. Sometimes half verse by half verse rotate, you know, back and forth is nice. If it's more complete thoughts per verse, then the whole verse by a whole verse might be the better way to go. You kind of got to look at the psalm and see how it's constructed. See what might work. We're going to do it by whole verse, all right? And we're going to divide ourselves up. Since these guys are so spread out, there'll be one group here, and you guys will be this own group here, okay? And we're going to do it, let's see. It looks like we're safe to say odd number verses, even number verses. Sometimes, you know, the verses divide up in the middle of the chanting division, so I think we're safe in this one. My previous hour, we weren't. I kind of got messy. All right, so Psalm 7, here we go. O Lord, my God, in you do I take refuge. Save me from all my pursuers and deliver me. Lest like the lion they tear my soul apart, rending it in pieces with none to deliver. O Lord, my God, if I have done this, if there is wrong in my hands, if I have repaid my friend with evil, or plunder my enemy without cause. Let the enemy pursue my soul and overtake it, and let him trample my life to the ground, and lay my glory in the dust. Arise, O Lord, in your anger. Lift yourself up against the fury of my enemies. Await for me, you have appointed a judgment. Let the assembly of the peoples be gathered about you. Over it return on high. The Lord judges the peoples. Judge me, O Lord, according to my righteousness and according to the integrity that is in me. Let the evil of the wicked come to an end, and may you establish the righteous, you who test the minds and hearts, O righteous God. My shield is with God, who saves the upright in heart. God is a righteous judge, and a God who feels indignation every day. If a man does not repent, God will whet his sword. He has bent and readied his bow. He has prepared for him his deadly weapons, making his arrows fiery shafts. Behold, the wicked man conceives evil, and is pregnant with mischief, and gives birth to lies. He makes a pit, digging it out, and falls into a hole that he has made. His mischief returns upon his own head, and all his own soul its violence descends. I will give to the Lord the thanks to his righteousness, and I will sing praise to the name of the Lord the Most High. Glory be to the Father, and to that Luther wrote in the first hymnals that were published in 1524. You know, one of the things that strikes me, even from this psalm, is the imagery, which Luther especially, he picks up imagery in his hymns, unlike most hymn writers. And like, what was the verse here, the pregnant one, what is that like, 14, you know, the wicked man conceives evil and is pregnant with mischief. All right, gives birth to lies, the imagery there. You know, Luther, as he was writing his first hymns, was translating the Old Testament. And that was his specialty, his Old Testament. And so he's going through different books of the Bible with all that imagery he could find, and he's just kind of built it into his hymns quite well. Fast bound in Satan's chains I lay, death brooded darkly o'er me. You can paint pictures with those words. Pay attention to them sometimes and enjoy that. But that's not why we're here today, are we? We're here to sell my book. Blatant commercialism. Oh, wasn't that awful?
Yes.
So, oh boy. Some of you have seen it probably. I'm going to age myself and tell you that it was 48 years ago that I was at a workshop. It was a worship conference. It was back when the Lutheran Music and the Arts, I can't remember, it was a pan-Lutheran thing. 1976 in Wittenberg, at Wittenberg University in Springfield, Ohio. I was a junior in high school, went to this thing. And it was a fascinating experience all around. I remember sitting in a workshop at where the gentleman was talking about hymn introductions and giving some ideas on how to do hymn introductions. And some of that just stuck with me all these years, along with other experiences. You know, I don't play organ regularly for church. I'm dean of the chapel at the seminary for organ. Before that, 17 years ago, I left the Synod's headquarters where I had Sean Denzer's job. I was the dean or director of the Commission on Worship for 11 years while all this fee was being prepared. So I've never really had a church gig as a regular Sunday organist in some ways. But I've always had an interest. At the seminary, we have a workshop every year. We give opportunities for musicians to come in for a week. Any of you been to our organist workshops at the seminary? A couple of you? Would you suggest others come? You said it changed your life.
It
changed your life. She said she was even afraid of me before she came.
I still am afraid of you.
But she got over it.
I did in the first hour.
The first hour? Oh my. I must have really embarrassed myself. You know, if you have never had the opportunity, we've done these for over 35 years. And 2 weeks, and 1 week for sort of beginner, and then intermediate intensive level the second week. Anyone who comes just loves it. In fact, in recent years, we've had a lot of young people. It's been amazing how many young people have been coming through. So, but we have all age records every year, and everybody becomes one big happy family. So if you're interested in that, take a peek. And so I don't forget, because I will otherwise, just to advertise while I'm up here. Our seminary, we have a conference every year in the fall. It's called the Good Shepherd Institute, a conference that we offer. Sacred music, but also pastoral theology, is kind of a combination. This year we're celebrating the 500th anniversary of those hymnals, so you can read this. This is at our table in the exhibit hall. It just describes the speakers that we're going to have this year. We've got a couple big names coming in. And then on the other side, shameless advertising, two things. We have a new CD that's going to be coming out in about a week. It's called Alleluia Sing to Jesus. It's a collection of 15 hymns that were sung in our chapel at various hymn festivals over the years. And so it really is quite an interesting. I just listened to it recently. Some of these recordings are probably from 10 years ago. You just picked various hymns from those various years and put together a CD. So if you're interested, if you still have a CD player in your car, which I know, it's frustrating. It's also available on iTunes and Spotify, so we're with the times as best we can be. All right, this book, Inviting Them to Sing. Did everyone get a handout? Did you get a handout? You need one? Send that. I don't exactly remember what inspired me to produce this resource, but one of the things I wanted to do, I wanted to provide something that would, you know, usually you buy a collection of 11 hymns and prayers or something, or six things of this or five of that. I wanted something with a whole bunch of things in it, which means they probably have to be a little shorter. And that led me to think about hymn introductions and you know, not only providing a bunch of introductions, but also some guidance on how to prepare your own hymn introductions. The default is usually what? Open the hymnal and start playing. I'll play through the hymnals. My mother was drafted to be an organist at the age of 16. They gave her 9 organ lessons. She played piano, and that was it. And her default was always just play through the hymn. just always was. And when you got to the end of it, then you open the crescendo pedal and put all this stuff. There's only six ranks in this organ. 30 stops, but six ranks. And then start singing the hymn. And it worked. It worked fine. She led well, and she did it for 75 years. Finally retired last year. She wasn't full-time anymore. But there are so many ways in which the hymn introduction can be done with just the simplest little things that can make it rather interesting. Healing, or as the title of the question called, inviting them to sing. To invite people to want to sing, to perk up and ready to go. So there's about 18 pages in here of conversation with some musical examples of how you might do your own introductions, prepare your own, beyond using the ones that are in here. But the ones in here then serve as examples, in many cases, for the ideas that I present in front. So that's kind of a teaching book in many ways, trying to give some guidance. The little handout I've given you just kind of summarizes a few things as we want to talk through this. I mean, one of the first things you have to do is know your tune. The tune for that hymn that you're going to be introducing. And by that I don't just mean know how it goes. It's usually you know how it goes. And you can play it. But to know the structure. Because one of my big contentions is you don't always have to play the whole hymn. In fact, if it's a really long hymn, it's like, right. Especially if it's the last hymn and you're standing, you know, it's like, can't we just sing this, you know? And if it's even printed in the bulletin, even more reason, why do I have to sit here and wait for it? Because I'm standing, we're done, it's been a long service, already sung seven hymns, here we go. So, to know the context and to be aware just of that, even. Now, there's a caution right there. You can't have such a short prelude or introduction that they can't find the hymn pass enough. Okay, that won't help either. But you know, if you time it, I bet most people can find the hymn within 15 seconds. And so just to be aware of that and realize I don't always have to play. But what if I do only do part of the tune, it has to be enough that it's given them a clue, this is what we're singing. So I hear that, I recognize it. And if it's a newer hymn, you probably need to play the whole tune so that they hear it. If not, even do more and have somebody sing the first stanza. Instrumentals play along in a couple of stanzas so they have some support and help that melody shine forth. But you don't always have to play the whole tune. And so first off of that, you have to know your melodies. Now, if you have a four-phrase hymn, so that would be any hymn with an SM, a CM, or an LM, short meter, common meter, long meter, you probably are going to end up playing the whole tune because it's so brief. You can hardly abbreviate those without, except what would be a good example? Common doxology, so. Sorry, messing around there. It wouldn't have to be more than that. Something you probably know of. But otherwise, you gotta have enough time to find it. But let's say you've got a longer hymn. let's use Pifferdal as an example. Lord of Glory, or Love Divine, O Love Excelling. We use that type. What happens next? It repeats. Okay. And then it goes on to some new material, doesn't it? On the fifth phrase. Right? And quite often, if you have an eight-phrase hymn, that's that fifth phrase right in the middle where you get the new material. It's often kind of a high point in many cases if you look at those two. You know, I would suggest quite often you can start right there. Because if they hear that, if it's familiar, if it's a fairly well sung tune, you know, if they simply are. And then you can finish off with the next two phrases. Even if you just play this in the hymnal, it's different than always hearing the first line. And I often find if you have the first phrases that repeat, if you skip the repeat part and then the next part, say, well, we've heard that, so I'll skip. It kind of sounds like something's missing, almost in a strange way. But if you start in the middle, it's not going to feel like anything's missing. And what you're almost doing is you're forcing them to say, wait a minute, that's not how a hymn starts. Oh, but I know what that hymn is. I mean, you're almost playing with their mind just enough to say, recall, where are we? Okay? And so little things like that, I think, can engage people in a way that helps them to just hear it, even in a most slightly different way, just a little refreshing to hear something played differently. And there are so many hymns that fit that category. We have so many hymns that would have a whole line of music, usually two phrases, repeats, then you have new material in the third line, and then the fourth line sometimes is a repeat of the first two lines, or almost exactly the repeat. So literally, three of the four lines are the same thing. You don't really have to play that all the way through. Start in the middle, and then when you play the last line, it's actually the first line. And so they've heard it. They've heard all the melodic material just in reverse order. As it turns out, it is the order of the second half of the hymn. So one of the things you might want to do, though, if you're going to just say, I'm going to play the second half, start in the middle, make sure you mark carefully where that is in your hymnal. Because if you want to say, here is it, if it's especially not the beginning of a line, but somewhere in the middle of the line, you know, mark it so you're not caught off guard when it comes to that moment in the service and kind of panic at that point. Something as simple as that can be helpful, I think. Let's see, have I already covered some of this stuff?
Yeah.
Maybe the first two sections, pretty much. You know, with introductions, you want the melody to be fairly prominent. And, you have to know your congregation. Are they confident singers? Are they hesitant singers? Do they know the church's hymns well or not? You're constantly engaging, that question, trying to determine how much are they familiar with it. You're trying to guide them along without spoon-feeding them, trying to find the right balance. And it'll work better some weeks than others. It's just going to depend on how you you just keep thinking about how can I do the slightest differences that doesn't make it the same old, same old, same old. Okay? Even if you want to just play what's in the hymn book, though, there are ways to bring just the slightest bit of variety that, again, can cause us to kind of perk our ears up. And one of those is simply to work with registration. One of the beauties of having two manuals is that you can use both, either sequentially or together at the same time. You have multiple options with that. And even that alone is sufficient. It could be something as simple as, but even something as simple as that, again, just let the sounds of the organ go through. The hymn, okay, and then you can go. Now, just play with the sounds. You've got so many sounds. And when you play as a sounds, don't just play, I'm going to take the 16th foot dulcian in the swell. If I play it an octave higher, what pitch is it? It's 8 foot. If you take a 16th foot stop, play it an octave higher, it's the normal pitch. So, it would normally be down here. But that's even kind of interesting. Stay there the whole way through. Add an 8-foot flute to that. Different color all of a sudden. Just adding one stop to another. Experiment, experiment, experiment. If you don't like it, don't do it again. You can't break the organ just like putting stops on and off. Well, I shouldn't say that. You might have an old persnickety organ that's like not happy with you or something. No. Usually, if you don't like the sound, just don't do that one again and go on to something else. And if you say, I don't think I really know how these organs, what is the push and how many of them might be in that category? What stops do I want to do? That's often one of the early budding organs, that's their first work. I'm afraid to push any of these buttons down. What are they going to do? Let your ear guide you. If you think it sounds ugly, well, then maybe don't do that one again and find a better one. But to find sounds your congregation's never heard in the instrument, that's kind of fun. And sometimes it just means a single stop all by itself. I mean, just a single flute. Listen, just what you get there. That's a 4-foot. Or. Or. just three more options I could try with just eight and four good flutes, one by one. And maybe echo one, that first line, the next phrase up here, and just kind of let the sounds, just play with it. It doesn't have to be rocket science. And maybe on a particular Sunday, just try this with one hymn. Don't overburden yourself. Like, what am I doing now? Write down what you're going to do so you're aware of it and ready to go. If you have pistons and you have enough of them, you can even save it, you know, how you want to start the introduction, so you don't have to think about it in the service, especially if it comes right after something else you were playing, like the amen on the end of the service. Now you're ready for the last hymn, and you're pushing buttons, and getting all nervous and worried. Have that one in memory, you know, have that one in memory and hit it right away, ready to go. Comments or questions thus far? Nothing pretty all that new. That workshop 48 years ago I attended, one of the things I remember specifically came from this, I think his name is Stephen Gabrielson. That's the name sound familiar to anybody? I think he's one of the ELC, now an ELCA school up in Minnesota or somewhere. But he talked about varying the texture. And by texture, we mean the voices. We typically, most all of our hymns are a four-part texture, four voices, soprano, alto, tenor, and bass. And his simple suggestion for kind of creating an on-the-spot hymn introduction is just to vary the texture a little bit. I was doing that with that last hymn by just doing a two-part texture. Nothing fancy, but again, it's different than just playing all four parts like they're going to hear when they sing the hymn. And a lot, you know, with a two-part texture, you could really enjoy the different kind of sounds of the organ. If you really have a big festival, okay, don't wake them up. again, you just experiment, try and see what sounds work best. But the suggestion this gentleman gave at this workshop was to take the four phrases of just a simple four-phrase hymn and to increase the texture from single voice, unison, adding a second part, adding a third part, and then all four parts for the last phrase. So each phrase, the texture increases until you're at the end. It doesn't take much to make this happen. To make this happen, though, I need a hymnal. And I don't even see one at the organ. May I borrow it first?
It must be the church.
All right, very fine. Well, then, it's just waiting. In fact, it says St. John's Sword.
I have several hymnals back here.
Okay. I don't think anyone else will need one. I just wanted the one. You could actually open my book and just pull some examples out, too. I'm going to give you an example. You know the tune St. Michael? Okay, which goes like this. Okay, I'm just gonna use 8-foot principles, so it's nice and clear. Which voice part would you be thinking to probably add for the second phrase? It'd be tempting to go to the alto voice, wouldn't it? It's like, well, that's the next one there, right? But then in this case, it wouldn't sound so bad. Sometimes you get lucky. Here's how the alto voice would sound. Here we go. Not bad. But usually the voice you want to add is not the alto, but the bass, as some of you were saying a second ago. Let's hear that. Okay, often the bass is going to be in contrary motion to the melody. If the melody is going up, the bass is going down, and vice versa. It just creates this nice balance. The only problem with that is we're kind of separated by a long distance between the soprano notes, and sometimes more than two octaves of distance. So the remedy is just to bring the bass up a line, an octave. So bring it up so it's closer to the melody, so it comes out like this. Right? When they're closer together, they just blend better. You don't get this big separation between them. For the third phrase, you need to take the bass down the octave to its normal place. If you go to the back side of your sheet, you're going to see the outlines for this. I should have told you this to turn to the back side. You see where it's talking about four phrases at the top there? Mm-hmm. Okay, so we're coming now to the third phrase of the hymn. The bass goes back to its normal place, and you have to fill in with just one note either the alto or the tenor note. And this one you have to kind of listen and think what's going to fit, what you need to fill in the chords is what you basically need to do. So here's the second phrase. Now the bass is going to go down, I'm going to add a middle phrase. It's just three parts here. Just three notes, not four. And now all four. Kind of invite itself to figure out a way to go about this task. If you notice, look at the eight phrase hymn suggestion that comes in that next section. Now, with an eight phrase hymn, and we've got a lot of those hymns, you can use the same formula two ways. The first one is you bunch up phrases. So phrases one and two just have a melody line. Phrases two and three. So let's take a hymn. We'll take Rejoice, Rejoice, Believers. Okay, so that would be. Now add the bass for the next two phrases. You go through that cycle twice. So, one voice, now two voices, three voices, four, now one voice again, two voices, four. So in other words, you just kind of rinse and repeat the process. But remember what we talked earlier about, three of those four lines are basically the same melody. It's just that third line, the fifth and sixth phrases that are different. So start in the middle of the hymn, but do the four part thing. So just start right there. So there's all kinds of ways to play with this. And just again, don't do it always the same. Maybe you'd only do that once in a service. But again, kind of watch for what hymns would be an easy way to start. With that little method, the trickiest part is the third phrase. And you're going to have just three notes. You're going to be tempted to play all four. That's just going to be your go-to. That's how I always play it. But to force yourself to do three, you got to have the melody, you got to have the bass, and you got to fill in one note, and you got to figure out which note's the right one. Because you need the third of the chord. Otherwise, you get these open sounds like. I want that B in that G chord. Not that. See, sometimes you might need a tenor note, sometimes you might need an alto note. You have to kind of just play it carefully and figure that out. Write it out, by the way. I mean, you may say, I'm not a composer. You could write it out. If it doesn't work, just crumple it up and throw it away. Practice your bank shot and try it again. But if it works out well, save it for the next time. Put the tune name at the top, and now you're a composer. In fact, I asked CPH to include in the back here some staff paper blanks, make copies. And of course, they have. You can find that online, I'm sure, anywhere nowadays, as well, because the internet has all. Let's give an example of a six-phrase hymn. What is Go to Dark Gethsemane? Anybody know four or something? Are you six, maybe? Yes, 436. Okay, good job. All right, thank you. Okay, This usually about the sixth phrase hymn, you usually have all new material. Every phrase is different. Might be similar, but usually goes somewhere else. But here's an example where maybe you do the first part. Now two parts. Now we'll go to one part again. Maybe different manual. Now two part. Now three part. Now four part. Again, just if you know the structure of the hymn tune, that can really help guide you in terms of how you're going to kind of figure that out. I don't think there's any place to really to shorten that tune, unless you just feel like the last two phrases, but that means they have to have the hymn in front of them already. Because you really have to almost do the all six phrases if you just want to have a melody really play through. But again, study the tunes. Take a look, listen, see what can come up, so that you have a chance to let each tune kind of do its own thing and let it guide you in many ways. Look at the character of the tune and the text, and if it's got somewhat of a fanfare nature, let those trumpets blow out once in a while, turn two. Check the organ first, you know, any geese honking away in the middle of your introductions. Other things with introductions. I mentioned earlier about playing unison. Sometimes I think a short tune can be played just with unison. And just imagine if you were to introduce a hymn like this, Advent time. It's just like, it's kind of singing Advent. Sound of that, kind of the plaintive nature, the expectation of that season. Something like that can just kind of catch people off guard in a way that can really, really, I think, have a great effect. Another attempt is to use a pedal point. And a pedal point simply means you put your foot in a pedal and leave it there, basically. You got to figure out what's going to be the best note. You could do, let's just change here. So, you could literally just keep doing this. Okay, I just simply started on the, I started adding up. Again, compose, just play with just two parts. You guys can write two part sections. If you don't like it, throw it away. If you like it, save it for another day. I started on the E flat. You start on the B flat. You probably don't want to leave it there. That sounds kind of ugly. And let your ear again guide you so that you can think through what might work well. It's the experimentation, trying different things and see what would be something that livens it up ever so slightly or invites them to take a listen. The two-part idea, also you can just do a whole hymn introduction with two-part, and this is where especially it becomes nice to use two manuals because you can let that melody stand out in its own way. And then as an example, just as in terms of what are some of the options. Alas, and did my Savior bleed is on the next page, so I'm just going to use that kind of because it's here. Maybe start by melody alone. Now just add the second part. Um, again, if you just want you want the oral experience to be one of some little new color on the paint on the canvas that you're painting. You're just using different colors to paint the picture. One of the things is to not be afraid to embellish that second voice with some additional notes. Do you know what a passing tone is? If you have a G, A, B, it goes from G to B, you just fill in the A in between, just kind of moves up and fills in some notes. And don't be afraid to start playing around with other ways to start to, again, take that tune maybe just to the next level. So here's as I'm glad as men of old, and I'm just turning pages, so this. Start walking around. Again, these are the things you want to write down probably so that you start to take some careful note and come up with other, something that's going to be like its own independent voice almost. It'd be like having the bassist or the alto singing a nice counter melody to the melody that the soprano sings. Any questions or comments before I just play a few examples of what I did in this collection? To demonstrate some, kind of messing around with some ideas. And again, these were composed, so they're not just off the top of my head. Some people can just quickly do these all off the top of their head, and more power to them. We'll let them do that for us. And at CPH, of course, and other publishers, they publish human productions. And so, keep your eye out for all kinds of stuff. And Paul Solik, the musician here, has published some things. He's got, I think they're under 30 seconds. Is that what it's called, that one collection he has? Yeah. Just again, he's aiming for short little introductions that kind of let the character of the tune, the character of the season, whatever it might be, kind of govern how to go about that task. I really aimed for simplicity here. I wanted something you can just pull off of, put on the rack and play without having to have a lot of time to prepare. And I very intentionally chose tunes that are used multiple times. So you actually get 117 hymns covered with this book. So that's, sixth of the hymns. I wanted you to get your money's worth. How's that sound? Here's an example. This is Lord, keep us steadfast in your word. I want to hear an example where it's just two parts, but it allows you to have that second part just kind of moving around and adding into a variety of things. And it has two pedal notes at the end, okay? It's just two pedal notes. But hang on, I've got to make sure I have this right. No idea how this is going to balance at the moment. I'll make a little louder here. Okay, so here we go. Notice at the end I went back to I brought the second hand to the trumpet because I brought the melody in. Let's hear that opening phrase one more time. So the last phrase, hang on. So. And I like to sometimes do that, bring the first notes at the end again. So you just hear even just the slightest snippet of what we're going to hear. Or here's an example of that. Turn to the pages. The other way. This is a real short one. Salvation to us has come. A short introduction. You gotta make sure. If you have a really short intro, you know how to make sure they have time to get to the hymn. Don't start it right away. Just give it 5 seconds for them to start looking, and then you start the introduction so that they still have time. But this one is just kind of playing with the themes. You just see if you notice this. Sorry.
But you notice that those are the opening notes that I just then I can't repeat it again. Dun, dun. And you're gonna hear that three times, and then you get the second half of the tune on the top. So this is the fifth phrase. Repeat the beginning, sixth phrase, seventh phrase. Now first phrase. So it's really just kind of stitching the phrases in different places, but probably everybody knows that too, or most everybody. That's going to be enough to get you where you need to go. Or, I'm going to give you another example just along the same lines. There we go. This is Salvation Unto Us Has Come. Kind of a similar thing, a little different though. Same thing higher. And once you find this book, I also usually have, not usually, often have two introductions for the same tune. One of them being a little longer, one of them being shorter in some cases. Sometimes it goes through the whole hymn, but then I have a short version that you might want to use. So it's kind of an opportunity to play around and to hear the different options that you might find. Comments or ideas that you have for introductions that you use that you like or you've heard others do?
What would you do as a kind of a segue into a doxological verse?
Ah, that's a whole publication I want to do someday. Yeah, that's a good question. Yeah, you want to know in advance what you're going to do and not surprise yourself, right? Yes. You know, one of the tricks, and let's see if we can find a couple of examples. Let's see, we did this morning 941. Was that the number? No, not 941. We did, what is, all, dun, 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 all people that are earth moved well. Good grief. Okay. Hang on. I've got the thing right here. All people that are earth moved. 791. Isn't that just dyslexia? Okay, the fourth stanza of this one is, the fifth stanza is doxological. So, the familiar the common doxology, old hundreds. You know, one option is often to stay, those are the last two pentamotes, to stay on that dominant, on the D, and not going down to the G. So, it doesn't have to be much. If you just give them three extra beats, it's probably enough for them to get up. There you go for the last stanza. So don't feel like you have to repeat the whole last phrase or play the whole first phrase and then say, oh, they didn't end on the right note. But plan in advance what you're going to do, but keep it short. That really, now some organists get excited, they start adding all kinds of stuff. I'm like, on a festival that can be fitting. But for just a typical Sunday, it doesn't have to necessarily go, overboard. But yeah, it would be nice to write a whole bunch of those. I thought about that actually. I'm not going to tell you the title for the book. I don't want someone else to steal the idea and do it. So. But we'll see. We'll see if we ever get to that. Maybe we won't. Well, maybe we won't. Other examples. Anybody have any ideas that you've seen or tried?
I actually have a couple questions.
Okay.
So, in reference to the doxological verse, your thoughts on during communion, whether to do that or just go into it. And then also the hymn of the day, my pastor would really like that hymn of the day every Sunday to have a really long, fabulous introduction.
Ah, okay.
And sometimes that works in my life and sometimes, there's...
Yeah. Sure, well.
So those two things.
If you bat 500, that's a better than most baseball players. All baseball players, yeah, really. Every other week you get away with that. Good. If you're going to have a more extended hymn introduction, that's perhaps one of the places that it can be. Similarly, maybe during communion, longer introductions are fine. a trick there to be careful of. I mean, sometimes have you used literature as an introduction to a hymn, like an actual organ prelude for a hymn?
Yes.
What can be the danger with that?
It's too long sometimes.
Well, it's too long in the sense that they don't realize they're going to sing at the end of it. Yeah, it's like, well, that was nice. Oh, we're supposed to sing now.
I've trained the congregation. Over time.
All right. If you sit in the front, you can put your hat up like, no. The one benefit of being in front of the church, you could cue them. I guess that's all Paul Mons indicated. No harmony singing, I'm on, you know, I'm going to do my thing now. So you can set that signal for not singing in harmony. If you use a published prelude, let's say, or you just have this really extended introduction, you could catch people off guard and they're not aware, oh, we're supposed to sing now. Or maybe it happens that you've done a long prelude and you don't intend it to be introduction, but they think it is, and they're ready to sing and you're not ready to play it. You know, you can get caught off guard and you're the one surprised, not them. So you've got to make sure you find ways to signal them so that they know what's coming in that regard. You know, in terms of the introduction, it'll be easier with that if you're talking at the hymn of the day still moment before the sermon, because we know we're going to be singing a hymn here. The introduction, I'm hearing the tune, it's going a little longer than usual, maybe. She stopped. Okay, it's time to start singing. We pretty much, that one's not too hard to communicate. And there, you know, you just pick things. One of the things you can sometimes do is don't you have to play a whole prelude. Just because it's a 3-minute prelude doesn't mean you have to play the whole thing. You might find, in fact, tomorrow in the matin service, we're going to do Michael Costello, we'll prelude on The King Alone, My Shepherd, and St. Columba. And we're not going to do the whole thing because, you know, the congregation knows this. We've already sung one psalm, and this is our second psalm, and you know, we're going to have a hymn in a few minutes, and so it doesn't have to be a long prelude. But it'll be long, it's still plenty long because it will be a little ritornello and violins we can play at the beginning of it. So but you can sometimes take a prelude and take part of it. But again, you got to make sure it's the right part, that it makes sense, that you're ending at the right place, and you got to figure that out and be really prepared so that it will work just as you want it to at that point. But there's a lot of opportunities there, I think, with published music already there that you can make use of. Just have to be careful. You know, you wouldn't want to, I don't think you'd want a whole 3-minute introduction to a hymn before it's in the middle of the service. That just probably kind of becomes disproportionate to the whole big picture of what's going on in the whole service. During communion, I think you have more opportunities to pray. And sometimes, you know, maybe you have a nice prelude on one of the tunes or hymns you're singing. Maybe you play it after you sing the hymn. So you've sung that hymn, now you play that prelude. Give them a chance just to listen to that melody again while some are going to communion, some coming back, some just sitting there. So that's a way to avoid that confusion. Am I supposed to sing now or not? You played it after the fact. It becomes a nice little reflection upon that hymn. Did I get both of your questions?
Doxological verses and during communion.
Yes. Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's, you know, if they see the triangle, they're used to standing. I don't think you're going to keep them from standing. So you might as well give them a cue to stand and have them, you know. That's
can awesome. I quote you?
Unless your pastor says no. Sure. Now you can quote me.
It got to be like a controversy in the congregation because I decided that if that triangle was there, yeah. I was going to do it. And so several, first of all, really devout people, you know, like 5 people stood up. And then people started catching on, and it kind of got to be a topic of conversation. And then there was like a Bible class on, I'm not kidding, I didn't go. on hymns, and it was this topic, and people were kind of instructed not to stand up. So now what happens is the people, musicians or family members in the balcony, they all stand up. It's like a snuff
you
of your nose thing.
If you want to stand in the balcony, is that yeah. or most people won't see you.
It really has
you hate to have these kind of things become, you know, points of contention.
Yes.
So, you know, and just have a conversation with the pastor and decide what you're going to do.
You know what could be funny about that? We have 3 hymns during communion, and I almost kind of hate it when there's a doxological stanza on the very last hymn because it becomes a game of figuring out,
yes,
how much do I have to play in between and how do I get this time out so they're not standing up
and sitting down and coming back up again.
Pastor says, Joe, just play them and get them done, and then it just never goes that way. You understand.
Just put that in
earlier.
I know,
I prefer it when there's one of the first two hymns, because then they'll stand up, they'll sit down.
Right. exactly. Yeah. Yeah, just, you know, come to an agreement and don't worry about it. It's not something to fret over. No one should fight about such things. We have more important things to deal with in this world, don't we? Yeah, there's just, I mean, your task of leading the singing is really an important one. And to encourage singing is a multifaceted job in many ways, because they're calling, I should say. And it doesn't happen just on Sunday mornings either, where you can find other opportunities to encourage that singing. That's really important, because we live in such a musically illiterate culture, and I don't even mean that by that people can read music or not, we just don't sing. You know, at the ball games, they've got the soloists butchering the national anthem, so you can't sing along with them, as they turn it into a soloist adventure to show them how great they are. I mean, you just want to scream applause when somebody just sings it normally and you can join in. And take me out to the ball game, nobody knows how to sing that. It's a sad state of affairs in some ways, and we lose so much. And so, you know, we do a countercultural thing, and we should just do it with some gusto and excitement, encouragement, and joy. And these introductions can be one thing among many that helps to just give that a little bit of a nudge and encouragement. Here we go. Name that tune. Think of your, don't you know what your introduction be that? What was it? No, listen to this one. They might not know after the first measure or two, but by the end, you hope they know. Otherwise, you really haven't done the job you want to do. And sometimes, have you ever heard an introduction and you've done like, okay, I think I know we're going to sing before I know. Because if people don't read music, and a lot of people, I mean, you guys, you're all, how many of you are organists? All of you mostly. We're weird, aren't we? I mean, we know what the tune's going to sound like before we even play it. Where a lot of people, they can look at a title and say, give me an idea, please. You know, but they don't know. And so you have to always be kind of in their head to understand what they are thinking and how they, you know, whether they're processing it or not. And so the introduction has to do something to just give a little bit of a clue. Like, oh, I know this. But again, it doesn't have to be the clue right from the beginning. It might be a few measures in before they start to, But that, you know, to an extent, you're kind of, you're reeling them in. You know, you're just like, come on. And kind of this, that invitation. Sometimes it means they have to put two and two together, or even subliminally, to realize, oh yeah, I know, I've seen it. But that really should be your goal at the end of the day. And to encourage that joyful participation. Yes.
I was thinking this may be, this question may have too many answers. Is there a good rule of thumb to determine at the end of your introduction how long to hold the last note or how long before you bring it in?
Yes, oh, that's such an important question. Yeah, and it's not easily answered. And there's different theories and practices on this. So I'll give you kind of, I don't have a particular, and here's my theory. When you lift your hands, that is a subliminal message sent to the congregation to breathe. And if you lift your hands and go down too quickly, they will not have gotten their breath. If you lift your hands and hold away too long, it's like, yeah. You've had those moments before too. You have to imagine yourself as a conductor. You don't get to use your hands, and they don't get to watch you, okay? Or even your head, you don't get to do that. You're usually not out of sight. But you have to have this sense, like, nah. And my sense, from as I listen to him playing, is that it's very tempting for organists to come in a little too early for various reasons. A, maybe you're making a piston change. Think about the piston change. You gotta get this in, you know? And go! Whereas, go, you know, that you... Because when you're doing this, and if you just kind of pay attention to this a little bit, if you come in right with the congregation, the exact same moment, it's like, wow, that really is powerful. As opposed to, you play, they sing, it's like, together, they sing. It's hard to remember that as an organist in many ways, and you almost have to practice it. So finish your introduction. I mean, it really doesn't matter how long you hold the last note of the stanza before you go to the next, from stanza to stanza. If you go way too long, yes. But you can hold it sometimes longer, sometimes shorter than others. Some people might have an exact count, dun, 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 and then you go on. But I don't think that's necessary. What's the crucial thing is when you lift, that's the signal for them to breathe, and then you come in. And you want to come in when that breath is ready to be released from that. Yeah.
Well, we have an organist at a church, should we not unnamed, who could not get that concept through, that he needed to give more space
yes.
between the end of the verse and the start of the next one. And even though I told him, all right, you physically breathe at that point before you come in, you could never get it back. And that's what I do. I physically take a breath, so that if I can take a breath, then most of the congregation can too.
Right. Yeah. There might be different ways to practice doing this in a sense. You know, it may be like with your choir. You practice it, you finishing a phrase of a hymn, the last phrase of a stanza, and then start just to do it a cappella, and then do it and start the next phrase together. But even to do it with your eyes closed, you just kind of sense it. And you got to kind of feel it, in a sense. I hate to use that word like that, but you kind of have to just have a sense of that without being able to see it. They don't get to see you doing anything like this. You just, boom, and you know where it is. And that will be different for every room, because depending on the acoustic, if you have a dry acoustic, it will be a shorter period of time. I remember when I was studying the Valparaiso, which has a 6-second reverberation in that huge chapel. And if I remember correctly, I don't know if it was my teacher or someone else who made the comment that you want to hear the sound bounce off the other end, and then you know it's time. And you kind of, especially in such a huge space like that. But you know, that isn't 6 seconds before you do it, that's not what that means. But you just have that sense, it will be different in every room. This room is very reverberant. It's not that much of an echo of any type. You know, it's not a long period of time that the sound hangs on, but it's extremely reverberant, resonant. Actually, that's a better word. It's extremely resonant. The building just kind of sings with us. And so it doesn't have to be super long, but you know, just to have that right moment. So I'm playing Matt this morning. We'll see how I do. You guys are like, judging me now. I've actually written in a few spots. Wait, I'm just reminding myself. I don't do this every week. But just to kind of watch for that and take a good listen. And you just have to kind of practice it too. But it's being conscious. I think that's the most important aspect to that. Is pay attention to what you're doing and listen. And, you know, just think about Fred and Mary and George out there. Come sit with me. Here we go. Good question. That's a very important question. Anything else? Yes?
My pastor likes to split up like really long hymns, like 10 verses.
Yes?
Kind of half before, half after the sermon.
Yes?
How would you suggest like a secondary introduction to the second half?
I would keep it shorter. I think there's no reason they have to go into a whole lot of, they know what the tune's going to be. So, I mean, they need to hear a tempo, they need to hear a little bit of something getting ready. I mean, maybe many of them left a bulletin there or have a ribbon there, since they know that's often going to be the second part sung right after the sermon. So I wouldn't make that very long or elaborate. Just something that's to the point. It can still be of interest, you know, play around with voicing a little bit, but not the whole tune. Usually. It's not going to be necessary. Yes?
This is similar to the question about before that's not the first, but suppose it's a high festival.
Yes.
And not necessarily that celebrity, but you want a more elaborate.
Yeah. Interlude between, well, the danger there is if it's not doxological and they're sitting and you play an interlude, what are they going to do? They're going to stand. So one has to be careful of that, I think. I know. And if they're well trained and they know, well, that's not doxological, we're not supposed to stand here, but I mean, there could just be this subliminal, okay, now it just, you know, this is our habit, we get up now. So, you know, whether you do that or not, or maybe you do it not before the last stanza, but a previous stanza, you know, between the second and third stanza, correct? If it fits, you gotta look at the hymn text and decide whether it would be fitting or not. Or maybe you're doing it after every stanza, if it's like no more than 4 stanzas, let's say. As long as it's a short interval, something that's just kind of punctuated a little bit. So, and that's, you know, and maybe they stand and they shouldn't have, but who cares? You know, it's not like the end of the world. If they accidentally stood up and it wasn't doxological. Oh dear.
What would you play?
Well, Yeah, I mean, just repeating the phrases is like, well, why am I doing that? You know, but you almost want to have something that's kind of, if it's festival, kind of fanfare-ish, perhaps, at some time. You might want to play around with that a little bit and write some. I'd write something down so it's so that you've got, you're not going to just be surprising yourself. Is it time for another session?
It's time for youth choir and
Ah, rehearsal time. We're done. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening in to this recorded session from the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod's Institute on Liturgy, Preaching, and Church Music. We hope you'll join us at one of our conferences in the future. Visit lcms.org/worship-institute for more information. lcms.org/worship-institute.